bringing you the latest research, tools, and common sense tips you need to get and stay healthy. It's Talk Healthy Today. Here's Lisa Davis.
Hi, I'm Lisa Davis, and I am so excited to be talking about such an important issue. You know, Alzheimer's affects so many people, and it is such a difficult thing. As a matter of fact, my father-in-law was talking to me about a relative that has Alzheimer's, and he was said, you know, we can talk about the past, but the present is just not, you know, and I don't know if that's the case for everybody, but that was the case for this gentleman. And I just know it can be so heart-wrenching. I've talked to lots of caregivers. So I thought, what a great book that I'm holding in my hand. You can't see me, but I am. Why Buddha Never Had Alzheimer's, a holistic treatment approach through meditation, yoga, and the arts. We are joined now by Shuvendu Sen, MD. Dr. Sen, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's so nice to have you on. This book immediately caught my eye. Number one, my favorite color is green. So it's beautiful. And you have the outline of a Buddha with this beautiful green and blue flower in the background. And so it immediately sort of puts you in that kind of mellower state of mind of like, okay, I really want to get into this. And I thought it was so nice to see that we're looking at different ways rather than, I would say, like the paradigm now of just Western medicine. So I would love for you to talk to us a little bit about how this came to you when you first realized that these holistic treatments were a good thing for Alzheimer's and other things.
Right. You know, it actually started on a very personal note, if I may say. A long time back, and I'm talking about years back, my grandma, she was an out-and-out scholar, somebody who was very academic, very scholarly. And I was very surprised when one day we actually lost her. She kind of wandered away from the house. When we rescued her, she had completely no recognition of her surroundings, and eventually she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And it struck me that someone who's so educated, so academic, so scholarly, could become a functional ruin, a complete vegetable in such a short span of life. And and then, you know, I had that question in me that how could she become a vegetable? Because, you know, we have that concept that if you're studying hard, if you're academic, you will not get rusted. 30 years down the road, I still have the same question. The world still has the same question as to someone who is so educated and academic could actually become an Alzheimer's patient. And so down the line, when I started to practice medicine, I would see this disease and I realized, along with my colleagues and other scientists, that this is completely a different disease compared to the other diseases that have challenged us. I mean, this has a very diverse kind of a manifestation. It's much more fine than, let's say, uniform diseases like depression and bipolar, when we know exactly what's going on. And and it is very deep. And again, we are scratching the surface. We have some FDA-approved drugs, appropriately approved by the FDA. But then we know that the longer trials clearly show that they are not therapeutic, far from being curative. So now we are thinking about stepping out of the box. We are thinking about bringing up some treasures that we have had in the past. And now that we are blessed with modern technologies, the modern technologies and researches, they are actually showing that these ancient arts like meditation and yoga, they actually play a very vital role in the prevention of this particular disease.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because you were just talking about the medicine and you have this great chapter. I love chapter two, drugs, 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 modern medicines, commodity fetishism. And you say, coming from a physician who encourages and endorses the appropriate use of over-the-counter drugs and routinely prescribes FDA-approved medications, including controlled substances, this chapter may appear paradoxical. You know, I have to say, I didn't see it that way at all. And you were talking about that a bit there. You know, people are often surprised that I have a child on the autism spectrum. She also has ADHD and some other issues. And medication absolutely changed our lives and changed her life. And she's more herself than ever because she's not constantly overstimulated. She used to, the wind would blow on her face and she'd cry. Now she goes to school and she has friends and she's thriving. And so I think people look at me and say, oh, but you're so health conscious, but you buck the system. You subvert the dominant paradigm. It's like, yeah, to a point. So I just want to say I can relate to you, right?
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, in certain cases, as I always say, that there are certain medicines that work, you know. But for certain disorders, which are as deep as Alzheimer's or for any other cognitive disorders, they are so big, they are so colossal, that a single line prescription drug may not suffice. And see, I face this question a lot, Lisa, when people would say, you talk about stress being the point of entry for Alzheimer's. Why can't I just take a Xanax? You know, that's a medication that we always take to bring down anxiety and stress. And this is what I tell them, that, you know, you start with a 0.5 milligram dose, and then, and it gives you an immediate effect. You're very happy about it. But the patient invariably comes back to me and says, you know what, Dr. Stan? I was doing well, but then that 0.5 doesn't work for me. Can you increase the dose to 1? And here starts the journey from 0.5 to 1 to 1.5 to 2.5. So what you get at the end of it is, number one, you get the adverse effects, and then you get the tolerance. The drug just doesn't work. So in those situations, that's what we say, that none of these drugs are angels in the sky. They have their own sweet side effects. And then something as profound and deep as meditation and yoga, which they do not have tolerance, they do not have the adverse effects, they're cheap. They actually work in a much more, you know, deeper way than this single hit and run drugs.
Yeah, and talk to us about those ways. Because, I mean, we all hear about the benefits, but I'd love to hear it from your point of view, and then specifically how it's going to help with the Alzheimer's or prevent it.
So in terms of meditation, and again, as I said, we are blessed that we live in an era where we have the luxury of some of the finest sophisticated techniques. For example, the diagnostic imaging that we do, like a PET scan or a functional MRI. So through them, we have actually gone deep into the brain of a meditator, and we have seen the wonderful effects that meditation and yoga does to the brain. From a very scientific point of view, there are two ways it can do. There are many other ways. The two major ones that has come out of this tremendous amount of research work that has been done in some of the leading institutions of the world are, number one, there are certain waves in our brain. You know, we have an alpha wave, a beta, gamma, and a delta, and so on and so forth, off of which this alpha wave is a direct reflection of tranquility, of serenity, of peace that we have. So whenever there is peace, we have this development of alpha wave, and vice versa. If we can increase the alpha waves, there is a sense of tranquility that comes in. Now, there are no drugs which can increase the alpha waves. It has been found comprehensively that meditation, be it a transcendental meditation or a mindfulness meditation or yoga, which is kind of like an extension of meditation, they have produced or they have introduced this tranquility, serenity, peace, contentment, and lo and behold, there were a plethora of alpha waves. So that's one. The second one was an even more direct way, which was, to me, it was a wonderful discovery of this late 21st century. It is this development of what we call as neuroplasticity. Neuroplasticity means the creation of new nerves. And we have seen that this meditation and yoga has given rise to this tremendous amount of neuroplasticity in exactly those areas which get hit with Alzheimer's. I'm talking about the left hippocampus. I'm talking about the medial prefrontal cortex. Those are the areas that get hit with Alzheimer's. Those are the areas that are showing enhanced cerebral activity, enhanced neuronal activity through the development of these nerves. And there are many other ways. And as I mentioned, stress being a big point of entry for Alzheimer's, there are certain risk factors that we have been able to identify. We talk about stress, which clearly hogs the limelight. Then we talk about obesity. We talk about diabetes. We talk about hypertension. Pretty much all the risk factors for heart diseases have been identified as risk factors for Alzheimer's, of which stress is very, very important. So through this ability to introduce tranquility and peace, this is basically the triumph of meditation and yoga, that they can actually suppress stress in a much more profound way than this just hit-and-run medication. So those are the two or three basic ways meditation and yoga have been proved to prevent this this onslaught of Alzheimer's. You know, I always tell people that, you know, it is a very difficult disease, because unless we have a full comprehension of how we remember, we cannot have a full comprehension of how we forget. Because Memory is very different. Memory is not just about, I don't know who you are. Memory is also, you know, it's like a relationship. If I put your number in the computer, if I just type your first letter of your name, L, the computer will generate that number. But if I put it in my head, and if I bring it out for myself, the moment I think about your number, I have to think about you. And I have to think about how you look, your mannerisms. So it's a relationship. So when that fades away, the relationship fades away, which is what happens with us. To think that a single drug is going to capture all those dying moments and bring it back to life is being very short-sighted.
Yes. Oh, I think so, too. Now, in the book, you talk about transcendental meditation. You actually brought up Ronald Ricardo, and you talked about he's 80 years old, and he was very stressed out. And it was so nice to read that he was able to say, after doing this for 3 years, you talk about these remarkable changes that happened in his life. And, you know, despite the fact that he was still under a lot of stress, and he said, I am so at peace. He told me during his last visit, I feel so unstressed. So do you recommend transcendental meditation then over other types or whatever, you know, works for you?
You know, that's a great question because it is so subjective. And we kind of, you know, open up to whoever who comes to us seeking for, you know, lessening of stress, or if they have a family member with Alzheimer's and they're anticipating the disease coming to them. This is what we tell them, that, you know, you don't have to actually sit in a lotus position like Buddha. It is very user-friendly. There are two major types, open and concentrated or closed. The open one, which is the mindfulness meditation, the definition that we have in today's world is, it's like a non-judgmental awareness of your surroundings, that you don't really try to, you know, trample all the thoughts that's coming to you. You kind of let it come inside you, and they will find a window to fly away from you. All you want to do is just sit
like
in a quiet, comfortable.
I didn't mean to interrupt. I just love that image.
Oh, thank you. and people actually are very comfortable with that. You know, they will just say, and then they'll call me up and say, you know, Dr. Sen, it's probably working. I said, if you have to concentrate on anything, concentrate on breathing, which is something which is so much an integral part of you, so inherent. And you just follow the journey, the trajectory of your breathing in and breathing out. And some others would again find that difficult. And for them, concentration comes easier for them. And then I would tell them, you know, the transcendental meditation is all about concentrating on an object. And that object could be anything which is pleasing to you, which has a very seamless kind of a relationship with you. It could be a flame, candle, could be a picture, could be a flower, could be a painting, could be anything. Or it could be a word that you just repeat, you know, and while you are concentrating on the word, you're actually closing in, but you're expanding your consciousness. So, you know, so as I said, not to repeat myself, the one is to just let it go, and the other one is to concentrate on something. Both are achieving the same target, just little different avenues.
Oh, I like that. You know, I love too in the book in chapter 5, you write, it's been more than 30 years since I first encountered meditation as a boy. Yet despite the ensuing years of heat and dust, those moments remain crystal clear, resonating with a starlight clarity under a bright blue sky. That is so beautiful. What a wonderful image.
Thank you so much.
I love that.
You know, I come from a country where meditation is like a sport. It's fostered in scholarly circles and taught in classrooms. And it's almost like, like a passion.
Wonderful.
So it comes very naturally to it.
More with Lisa Davis and Talk Healthy Today coming up. All right, my health-seeking friends, we know you want to be healthier, and that starts with eating better. But with not enough hours in the day, it can be difficult to cook a healthy meal every night. You know what I'm talking about. Not to mention you've probably tried before with good intentions, but have slipped back into old eating habits. Well, don't beat yourself up. We know it's hard. And that's why I want to tell you about Sun Basket. Organic and sustainable ingredients and delicious recipes delivered weekly to your door. With Sunbasket, it's easy to stay on track. And today you can get $35 off your first order when you go to sunbasket.com/talkhealthy. Now, the people at Sunbasket have sent me a couple of boxes, and I got to tell you, I love it. So what have I made? The chorizo chili is unreal. The Tuscan vegetable soup on a cold day is just what the doctor ordered. The two bean enchiladas is delicious. And the Saigon beef sliders are fast, easy, and so good. Imagine this, the ingredients and the recipes being delivered to your door without the time it takes to shop. I gotta tell you, it's very exciting. When you see that box out there and you go out, you pick it up off the stoop, you bring it into the kitchen. Oh, that's exciting. And best of all, each delicious, easy recipe is ready in about 30 minutes. With Sunbasket, you have total flexibility. You can cancel anytime, skip anytime, and choose any meal plan you want. So go to sunbasket.com/talkhealthy today to learn more and get $35 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/talkhealthy for $35 off. sunbasket.com/talkhealthy. Now back to Lisa Davis and Talk Healthy Today.
You know, it's so funny because I was a kid in the 70s and my mother used to meditate. She did TM, the Transcendental Meditation, and they took us to this place and I was about 8 years old and I didn't really understand what was going on. This woman took me in a room and she said, I'm going to tell you this thing. It's called a mantra. And I want you to go in your room and be quiet. And I want you to say it, you know, over and over, but you can never tell anyone. It's very secret. And then my brother and I, who are now grownups, this was many, 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 many years ago. I think it was a few years ago. We finally told each other and it was something really simple, but she kind of scared us. And I was thinking, you know, you don't tell kids to keep secrets. I'm thinking they took us to not the best TM teacher. Anyway, that story always cracked me up. So that's when that's what I think of.
Right. No, but you're so right. Psychologically, you're so right. If you tell a kid not to do that, they'll do just the opposite. They will probably share it. So, yeah.
Except I didn't. I was scared, though, but she scared me. And then I was like, and my mom would go to your room and meditate. But there wasn't any other instruction except that first time. And I would just play or do something else. So I think unless it's part of your culture or you're really maybe working with somebody, because even as an adult, aren't you supposed to find a transcendental teacher to work with you in the beginning?
We say that. I mean, it's becoming much more comfortable and user friendly for us. I mean, very dogmatic for us that you have to have someone. But in a way, we say that it is good to have someone to supervise only because of there are certain breathing techniques that comes with it. And you take a breath in a count of four, and then you hold it for a count of two, and then you bring it out in a count of eight, and then you can slowly double the numbers. So sometimes it might be an issue, let's say someone is asthmatic or somebody has a breathing problem or has been a former smoker. It may not be a good idea. So it's always a good thing to have a teacher so that if there are any negative effects coming out of a pre-existing disease, that can be taken care of. And again, this quiet transition from transcendental to mindfulness, that also gets, you get a help if you have a hand to make the transition.
All right. So, I mean, there's so much more to talk about. We only have about 5 minutes left. Again, why Buddha never had Alzheimer's, a holistic treatment approach through meditation, yoga, and the arts. So one question that comes to mind is, is this something that, I haven't been doing it since I was young, or I'm 50 and I don't want to get Alzheimer's. Can I start it now? Or you know what I mean? Because is it too late? I would think it's never too late. I would hope. But I'm curious.
Yeah, you're so right. That's right. It's just subjective. Okay. One can be a meditator right at this moment. I mean, there's no ritual, and I bent myself backwards to convince my convince my patient that it is not religious. It is just a very simple, profound process. Maybe it had its beginning from a certain part of the world, but this is again which is very scientific, and it can start at any age, but then sooner the better, because for a disease as so profound and so big, like a brain disorder, when I say that it is simple or it is complex, I mean that the liver and the spleen, they have their own limitations, but the mind is much more than the brain. I don't know where my bathroom is not just about Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is much more than that because its presentations are so diverse. The repertoire is limitless. So yes, to answer to your question, I mean, anybody and everybody can meditate. It has virtually no adverse effects. And it doesn't have to be so calm. And I have had patients who would come and tell me, Dr. Sten, I mean, I get confused, transcendental mindfulness. I would say, don't do anything. Just take a comfortable corner only when you are comfortable. And let the nature is very neutral. Let nature take care of you. And just breathe in and breathe out. That itself will create so much amount of new nerves that it will protect you. It will just increase the reserves of the brain.
Oh, that's fantastic. You know, the last couple of minutes, Dr. Sen, I wanted to talk a little bit about yoga. So I recently got into yoga after taking many year hiatus, and I tend to do yoga that's a little more athletic because I want to get those yoga arms. But I also find that while getting the yoga arms, which I'm still working on, my mind is not thinking about a million other things because it's hard holding those postures and you're breathing and you're focused. And so it's such an amazing thing when you can take something that is going to help you feel and look better, but also really help shape your mind. And it's wonderful. So I'm thinking even if you're doing a more athletic class, it's still beneficial is what I'm getting at.
Yoga is a fantastic confluence of the mind and the body. And they take turns where the body takes control of the mind because you are, you know, very concentrated on a certain posture, and then the mind takes over the body. So it's a seamless, effortless transition from the mind and the body, and these exact good effects are reached through these processes. I completely agree with you.
Well, this has been so eye-opening. I'm so thrilled you came on the show, Dr. Sen. The book is Why Buddha Never Had Alzheimer's, a holistic treatment approach through meditation, yoga, and the arts. Tell us all the places we can find you and your wonderful work.
Thank you. So it's been through the ACI publishers. It's been distributed through all the major distributors. I had a great book signing event at Barnes & Noble. So it's available on all the bookstores, including Barnes & Noble, and all the websites, including Barnes & Noble websites, Amazon, you know, .com websites. I guess it's all over and it's very accessible.
Now, do you have a website as well?
Well, I do have my own. There's a Facebook for, and the name of the Facebook is the name of my book, Why Buddha Never Had Alzheimer's. And through that, all the
links
are incorporated.
Oh, no, that's okay. That's good. So people can find it on Facebook then.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And then Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, all the online.
Oh, terrific. Well, everyone can find information about me and my shows here on Radio MD, You Naturally Savvy, Talk Healthy Today, Talk Fitness Today. If you go to It's Your Health with LisaDavis.com, I also want to mention that I have some exciting news. I'm going to be on season 2 as a health educator on the show Reversed. It's on Discovery Life. It's a wonderful show that helps people with diabetes make healthy life changes by very caring professionals. I absolutely love it. Again, reversedyourhealth.com, reversedyourhealth.com. Be sure to check them out. Thanks for listening. Stay well and read this book.